Hey, what it do, sports fans? Welcome to the Sports Live podcast brought to you by Multimedia Live. I'm Sboom Jikeliso, your host, and I will be joined by various guests on this exciting new podcast to discuss the latest ins and outs of the sporting world. I'm recording this episode from the most picturesque and the most incredible location. I never thought in a million, trillion, gazillion years I'd actually be sitting at the new Ohtani Hotel, downtown Tokyo, where I've come to watch some matches of the Rugby World Cup. It's actually my last day of the trip, and it's been a week where I've seen some of the most incredible sights, and I've seen some of the most incredible rugby getting played. Unfortunately, I'm not here for the entire tournament, but definitely, if you had offered me 1 week of the Rugby World Cup a year ago, I would have bitten your arm off. So for me, it's been the most incredible experience. Anyone who knows me will know that I've written rugby for many years. I've written all sorts of sports for many years, and I've never really had a chance to see some of the biggest major tournaments in the world. And this week gave me that opportunity to do that. We went to see the All Blacks versus the Springboks at Yokohama Stadium, and I'll talk about that. And then we went to see Ireland against Scotland, also at the Yokohama Stadium, before visiting this incredible country called Japan, who are hosting this year's Rugby World Cup. I think by world rugby standards, they've done an incredible job to take the game here. The people of Japan have embraced the world. They've embraced us, South Africans, the Irish, Scottish, some New Zealanders. They have really thrown their weight behind New Zealand. New Zealand have become the second team of Japan. I think mainly because their coach, Jamie Joseph, is a man from New Zealand, and their captain, Michael Leach, is a man who was born in New Zealand. So their New Zealand connections are very strong. So at Yokohama Stadium last Saturday, they were definitely behind the All Blacks, but they definitely also gave the Springboks a lot of vehement support. They were cheering us on, especially in moments when the Springboks in that game looked like they were really, really going to take the fight to New Zealand. And let's talk a little bit about that game between the All Blacks and the Springboks. Obviously, the All Blacks won 23-13, and I've said on social media that I really thought the Springboks should have won that game. And there have been very, very few games where the Springboks have dominated the All Blacks. I battled to think of too many where the upper hand has been with the Springboks for 60%, for 60 to 70% of an encounter between these two teams. I think back to the 2009 Springbok team that won three matches against New Zealand, and also I think they had a 5-match unbeaten streak at that point against New Zealand, and obviously they were the defending World Cup champions, and they were being coached by Peter de Villiers, and they had won the British Irish Lions Tour, they won the Tri Nations as a result. So it was an era defining team that, but you know, even then, it was always a fight. It was always, there were some minutes for the Springboks and some minutes for the All Blacks. But for this encounter, the Springboks can definitely say that they dominated 60 to 70 minutes of that 80-minute game. And really, the most difficult part the hardest pill to swallow about it is that it was really 3 minutes, 3, 4, 5 minutes of high intensity error making from South Africa and high octane counter attack from the All Blacks. A knock on, a breakaway led to a Scott Barrett try. And soon after that, soon, probably a few touches, the All Blacks, as they do, took the Springboks on as they were frazzled. I can remember the Richie Mwanga chip over Magazole Mapimpi, for Sivu Rees, and Sivu Rees beating Mapimpi on his outside. And you just, at that point, you just wish to stop time. You just wish to call a timeout, you know, in rugby. Unfortunately, there are no timeouts. You just wished that, you know, for a few seconds, you can snap the Springboks back into the game and back into the encounter and just let them know that trouble is on its way. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. And in a try, so in no time at all, Scott Barrett had scored a second try for the All Blacks. And the Springboks were down. They were wobbling. If it was a boxing bout, I would compare it to a boxing match, a heavyweight boxing match. And I'd say that I doubt that the box would have survived the count after that second try. But credit to the Springboks. Credit to the team that Rossy Erasmus has put together. They managed to fight back. They still wrested control, even though they spent the first 20 minutes outside of the All Black 22 crashing and crashing and crashing, and they just couldn't get any breakthroughs. And I thought, you know, of course, Andre Pollard had that missed penalty kick, which was almost straight on, and he hit the bar, and everyone was surprised. The score is still 3-0, and maybe if he had got that, it would have got to 6-0, but I don't think that was as important as the knock-ons that South Africa made, especially under the kicks of the New Zealanders, a few by Pollard, a few by Willy Leroux. I think those things mattered more. They contributed more to the downfall, I guess, in that game than perhaps Pollard's missed penalty, because Richie Mwanga missed a fair few penalties himself, so he didn't have the best kicking game as well during the game, which I think it is a little bit of a letdown, because the World Cups, kickers win World Cups, and you know, you want a 90 to 100% kicker at a World Cup. You know, I remember in 2007 when Percy Montgomery had done the kicking, Bush James had actually, you know, he had I think an 80 to 90% kicking rate. He was in shabby himself, of course, but Percy was the star of the show, could kick it from anywhere. And of course, we had the option of a Frans Steyn from range. So kicking was a very important part. Goal kicking was a very, very important part of Jake White's team when that team went on to win the Rugby World Cup in France in 2007. This time around, the Elton Yanchis wasn't in the match 23, and unfortunately, the only real kicker we had was Andre Pollard. And in some matches, he does look unflappable when it comes to goal kicking, but then you wonder what happened to the ice veins that he showed in Wellington to tie the game between the Springboks and New Zealand at 16-0 when he converted Herschel Yanchis's try. You wonder, where's that composure when it was needed the most? And unfortunately, he just couldn't have it, and there was no Elton on the bench. And it was just one of those things that, you know, I felt that, you know, the kicking definitely is one of those things that needs to be very, very close and up there in the 100% regions. You don't have any margin for error at the Rugby World Cup. And there were a lot of errors. And aside from those first 20 minutes that the Springboks dominated, they also dominated large chunks of the second half. And of course, we saw the breaks that Cheslin Kolbe had. And what a brilliant guy. He broke, got stopped by Richie Mwanga in the corner. There was another Springbok break where Willy Leroux had a pass, but it went to Colby's ankles. That was very, very disappointing. It was quite easily the most disappointing part of the match, because in any of those potential three or four try scoring opportunities that unfortunately the Springboks couldn't take in the second half, that would have changed the game. That would have rocked New Zealand. That would have changed the dynamics, because when you're dominating, you gotta win when you're winning. You gotta really, really put the points on the scoreboard. I thought Pollard did well to actually take a pop of a drop goal, something probably should have done in the first half already when the Springboks had possession but weren't penetrating and weren't coming back with points despite visiting the All Black 22. But in the second half, we switched it up. Obviously, somebody would have gotten in his ear in the changing room and said, look, just go for it. We'll lay it up. We'll lay the platform. I thought scrums were fairly okay. It's a disappointment that Trevor Nyakane, as unfortunately his World Cup has come to an end, but it gives a chance to Thomas Tutoi to come in. But I thought scrums could have been a touch better. I thought lineouts could have been cleaner, but we had a fair few steals. I think Franco Mostert had his best game in a Springbok jersey. In the forwards, I have to say that Franco Mostert for me was the most standout forward alongside Peter Steph Tutoit, who was immense everywhere. He's drawn a lot of respect from everyone I've spoken to. After that game, I bumped into a lot of Irish, and I'm going to squeeze a little bit into the Ireland-Scotland game. A lot of Irish were saying that, you know, in Peter Steph Tutoit, Faf de Klerk and Chesney Colby, the Springboks have some of the most incredible rugby players they have ever seen. And it's unfortunate that we are on a course to face Ireland now in the quarterfinals, who beat Scotland on Sunday in Yokohama. So they are looking likely to top their group, which means that for South Africa and Ireland, those two teams, they're going to meet each other in the quarterfinals. They might have avoided each other. It might have been an Ireland-New Zealand quarterfinal and a South Africa-Scotland quarterfinal, but not to be, or a South Africa-Japan quarterfinal. We don't know which of those teams is going to top Group A, but in Group B, it's definitely going to be New Zealand. So South Africa will pick themselves up for that game. Ireland looked absolutely clean and clinical against Scotland. 4 tries, shut Scotland out. I don't think Scotland scored a point in the second half. And Ireland was just absolutely, absolutely flawless. It's going to be a hard, hard game for South Africa when eventually it comes to that point. And just some of the stuff that happened off the field, bumped into a lot of Irish guys, like I said, in the bus. And one guy, I think his name was Phil. Yeah, because they kept saying, "Hey, Phil, hey, Phil." You know, his friends kept calling him over, and we're having this long conversation about, you know, he was convinced that the Springboks are going to beat Ireland. I'm not sure it's that obvious, you know, but he is allowed to his opinion, of course. And he was saying, Springboks will beat Ireland. You guys look very good. Should have beaten the All Blacks. And that has been the common theme. And then we went out for dinner at a few restaurants, and I also bumped into some Irish people there. And it was fun. I ended up getting, swapping my Michael Jordan jersey with a Scottish guy, and it was a mess. It was an outright mess. But, you know, I got to visit some shrines after that here in Japan, in Tokyo. We got to experience some, you know, tasting of the traditional food. We had a 13-course meal at some point. It's just been the kind of week where, you know, it's like you're in paradise. It's like you're dreaming, and it's like you don't really believe that this is actually it. You know, it's been such a crazy week that this is even the week when Naomi Osaka made history by winning a tennis tournament that was in the town of her birth. Naomi Osaka winning the Pan Pacific title, the WTA Pan Pacific title in Osaka, where she was born. She beat Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, 6-2, 6-3, you know, and it was written in the report that she actually cruised through that tournament. And for her, this was definitely a historic moment. It's just been crazy that, you know, even in the tennis field, some amazing things are happening in Japan, on the tennis court, I beg your pardon. So it's just an amazing, amazing week. The Rugby World Cup is going to be incredible for those who will experience it further than today, which is in Japan. It's been the 25th of September for a while. And anyone who wishes to send me a birthday message when they hear this podcast, please do. I'm at @smu_mjigeliso on Twitter. It is my birthday. So you can send me a nice little birthday tweet there. I'll try to respond to you. And I would really, really appreciate it. But let's get to the episode. And of course, I have to first adjudicate the upset of the week. And that has to go to English Premier League side, West Ham beating Man United 2-0 at the Lander Stadium. Didn't get to see that game, but I'll catch up with the highlights and know what exactly happened there. I know Chelsea, my team, they lost to Liverpool 2-1. Which is fine. We're just not the greatest team this season. Playmaker of the week, I have to give that to Cheslin Kobe without a doubt. And he has had he was the mood uplifter in the 23-13 defeat to the All Blacks. He's the guy that's given South Africa hope that they can win this World Cup despite them then having to do so after losing a game. And no one's ever won the World Cup after losing a game in the Rugby World Cup. Maybe the group stages, obviously, before the knockouts. So South Africa has to create history. They have to do things the hard way. But, you know, Cheslin Kobe is that guy that's given everybody confidence that the Springboks have every bit of a chance as the All Blacks, as England, as Ireland, as Wales, to win this Rugby World Cup. So, yeah, let's get into the long and special conversation.
Tune in to Cargumentative every Monday morning on Times Live Motoring. You can join myself, Thomas Faulkner, and my regular gang of automotive misfits as we discuss motoring news, views, and of course, have a cargument or two. That's Cargumentative, only on Times Live Motoring.
To advertise on the Sports Live podcast, email us at smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. Now, I can't wait till I say this is the Sports Live podcast brought to you by, this is your name, your entity, your brand, right after the Sports Live podcast. That's smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. Smith S. S-M-I-T-H-S at TISOBLACKSTAR.CO.ZA. I'm Sbum Jikeliso. I'm hanging here with quite probably the best rugby minds you will find at Craven Week, Grey College in Bloemfontein, 2019 Craven Week. And what a Craven Week it's been. It's the morning after the Golden Lions played Border in what I think was a thrilling match of the week, which was quickly followed up by Western Province 15 coming from behind to beat the Bulls. And it set up one hell of a finish going into the final day. But our focus is in getting to know the guys that have really come out here and made it the spectacle that it is. The guys that have also been chosen to pretty much have the future of South African rugby in their hands. I'm talking about Mziwake Ngosi, the SA Schools coach, was also the head at the Lions Craven Week team this year. And he's closely followed by Piwe Nomlomo, who's the SA Schools Academy coach, and he led the Border team this year. Gentlemen, let's have a proper rugby chat. I'm with Mtunzi Faj Mabetta as well. Of course, we know him from the Blue Bulls. Faji, good to have you as well. Now with SuperSport, commentating and budding content creator, knows his rugby, loves his rugby, is also joining in for the conversation. Obviously, I'm Sbum Jikeliso, little old writer who used to write for Sunday Times. I've written written Tano Manana's biography. I've edited Kickoff Magazine. I've written for Sunday Mirror in the UK, but that's nothing. The focus here is on the rugby guys. I'll start with you, Fudge. Being back here since 2005, this is the first time that Craven Week's been here at Grey. Can you give us a bit of a picture of what it was like to be here 14 years ago?
Hey, mate. Good to be here. Thanks, bro. Nostalgia on another level, walking through these buildings. You know, I can almost, it's almost like I'm looking through an 18-year-old's eyes.
Yeah.
And here I am full circle, still contributing to rugby, no longer on the pitch, but behind the scenes and commentating and analyzing. What a privilege, you know. These are hallowed grounds. Many a man has been clapped on this Craig College APLs. You know, people will tell you, from under 14, You know, being in Grey High School, it's been insane, you know, and beautiful to be back here, beautiful to still be involved with the game and just see how far it's come.
Yeah.
From 2005, 14 years ago. Can you imagine? We're right back here. It's been a one-year reunion for me. I started at Super Sport in the Craven Week last year in Park. And just incredible.
About it. You've like snowballed, bruh. I can't get rid of you. You're everywhere. You've gone from doing one little old Craven Week to Varsity Cup to Curry Cup and back the same way around. How's that going?
It's been going beautifully. It also helps quite a bit having played with some of the people that, now the conversation, the understanding, it helps with your analysis. And you know, I'm still quite young, so I have kind of a finger on the heartbeat of what's happening and where the game is moving to. I'm sure the two great coaches with us will agree with me.
And
what a privilege, man. It's an absolute pleasure.
Zeke. How have you found the week, and how tough is it also to look at raw young talent that you know isn't probably well-trained and to separate that talent from its peers?
Yeah, I think if you look at the week, actually there's been some interesting games. I think if I look at Craven Week's gone by, I think this is probably... the least predictable Craven Week, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Obviously, Western Province have thrown a spanner in the works with a 80-man B team, so to speak. And that's going to make matches difficult. But those are quality players nonetheless. If I look at how one has to weed out the talent versus identifying who can actually make a career versus who can make the step up to Junior World Championship, it is a difficult task.
What do you look for? What are the key signs that immediately tell you there's a player here?
Obviously, the guy's got to have, he's got to have his fundamentals right, he's got to have X factor, he's got to have a circus act.
Yeah.
There has to be a point of difference. The smart people speak about a point of difference.
Yeah.
So he must have a point of difference to over and above to what he brings, what a normal player would bring in his position. If I look at what else are we looking for? You're looking for, can he make it? Does he have the temperament? Does he have, you know, it's premature, but can we, you know, with some sort of assurance say he might be one who can make it in 2 years' time at the Junior World Championship? Because at the end of the day, I think the Craven Week is geared to prepare guys for the Premier Youth Tournament in the world, which is the Junior World Championships.
Yeah. Can we cast the die on this tournament? Is it still the tournament where you say that you make it here, you make it anywhere in South African rugby?
I think it's still the premier schoolboy tournament.
Yeah.
Partly because of, you know, in years gone by, it was a festival, but I think the temperature's gone up a notch, you know, each and every year. I mean, you only had to be here yesterday to notice that.
Yeah.
So if you can have a guy who can perform in this environment, you know, ultimately some people view it as a quarterfinal, semifinal, final, if you're really serious about it. And if a guy can perform here in a team that hasn't spent a lot of time together under pressure,
that's
something that speaks to what's going to happen at Junior World Championship at SA Schools level.
Where the scenario is the same.
I mean, I think Rassie was saying before his first test match, he'd spent 208 minutes altogether with the team.
That's not a lot of minutes.
208 minutes.
And you're going to play 18 minutes. So trying to pack in all the rugby knowledge into that 80 minutes, a bit tough, isn't it?
So I think, you know, there's been a whole lot of criticism regarding the Craven Week, and I think it's from people who don't want to see change. I think it's from people who are hanging on to the good old days. You know, if you ask me, this is my first Craven Week, and I think this is, like I said, it's the least predictable Craven Week. You know, if I look at years gone by, either Free State would come and pummel everyone, or Western Province would come in and pummel everyone. All other unions, if I look at SVADA, if you look at Poland, those are playing, man. So, you know, you've got a peace done with border.
Yeah. Border, no pushover anymore.
Precisely.
Yeah.
You know, so I think if people are hanging on to the good old days and pushing the narrative that because SARU, I mean, rightly so, are working hard to ensure that our game's transformed, that's weakening the Craven. If I think people are misleading us.
Yeah. Let's get into Coach P now. Pue, the border turnaround, it belies really the chaos that is border rugby. and I don't say that lightly. I really don't say that lightly. To come here with youngsters that almost exist in another planet comparing to the Mother Union, and to put out not just a competitive team, a team where they've been shown respect by their opposition. I mean, you started against the Bulls, brilliant first half, and then kind of tailed off in the second half. But you saw how when the Bulls secured the victory, how much they felt that we're in for a game, and they knew that going into the game. Same instance with the Lions, and that is probably the biggest feather in your cap that you can get. How has it been, the journey here, and how is it that you guys are able to just come here and just let the kids play?
Sbuda, first and foremost, thanks, man. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah.
It's a loaded question you ask. Let's start with the journey. It's been a tough one.
Yeah.
It's been incredibly tough, especially this year. Challenging is probably the right word. Back home, we've had our own challenges with the administrators. We've got a new administrator now in charge of border rugby.
Yeah.
Just as a whole, that has had its own challenges in terms of how we get here, the administration and kit and so forth. I'm not going to divulge too much into that.
Too deep into it. Yeah.
And then we come to the boys. We probably in a very fortunate place where no one expects anything from the border side.
Right. Okay.
So we come here and like you said, guys can express themselves. They've got a plan, but within that plan, Mosaic's touched on the Circus Act earlier on, you've got to be willing to express yourself. You've got to. No one is in a show. Every single guy knows that they belong here.
Yeah.
And it's easy. So to play the Bulls, it's very easy. To play the Lions, it's very easy because that's how you make a name for yourself. I think Fudge touched on it earlier on. It's that one opportunity. And if you don't take it, then you've got no one else to blame.
Right.
Whereas the guys that do take it might be fortunate enough to land up with Zakes in the SA school side and maybe in the SAA side, you know.
Yeah.
So everyone here has got a dream, especially where you've got young black guys that come from nothing.
Yeah.
So this is the one place where you can literally take your home and then get them to something else that they've never dreamed of.
Right, yeah.
So we got breadwinners here, my mate. As an 18-year-old.
This is a heavy statement, bro.
You understand? Yeah. So
they've got 18-year-old potential breadwinners
100%.
Playing here, yeah.
100%.
So what's at stake for some kids isn't always the same.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. We play for our livelihood.
Yeah.
That's the reality of it. We're not playing for a contract. You're playing for a scholarship so you can go and study.
Yeah.
You're playing for someone to see you so they can recognize your talent, and hopefully that gives you a sort of kick so you can kick on into something better where you're at.
Yeah.
We've got guys that don't know what they're going to be doing after school. There's no money at home.
Yeah.
So this is the one opportunity. Zex, you asked earlier on if Craven Wick is still the pinnacle. Of course it's still the pinnacle.
Yeah.
You ask every single black child who's coming from nothing if this is the pinnacle or not.
Yeah, and they'll tell you this is it for them.
With ease.
Yeah. I mean, you've got UJ, Northwest Perka, I think they've got like stands here, and you'll have all sorts of scouts. I mean, I think Montpellier scouts are here because of the relationship they've got with Gray. The stakes are huge. Also, everything is relative.
Yeah.
So for a kid from the Eastern Cape, if you get a pass to go to UJ and you can study, that in itself could be worth more than
an SA school scholar, or even a provincial contract, you know, because that education sets you up for life. Faji, when you were here, your rise to in rugby was not quite linear, because you were plucked by Anthony pretty much from the assembly hall, and he was like, come to the first team.
You're a tall man. Come out and trial it out. Yeah.
And you ended up playing for the Bulls, deputizing for Victor Manfield.
It seems almost unfair. You know, it's just like Coach Pio says.
Yeah.
It is the big... It's just like that, out of the blue, because the pools are so big. Yeah. Finally, you've got... Some of those roots are going deep enough to actually get into the really deep places in South Africa where it's making a difference to properly previously disadvantaged communities.
Yeah.
You know, and what a story that is. At the age of 18, you know, just having a skill as a teenager, you're able to just get that. And even if you don't make it, it's a huge moment. Communities are watching these games. It's big. These games are televised live, and not just for one day, for a couple of days. So what an opportunity. And look, back in my day, 2005, yes, there were big names, Franz Steyn and, you know, the Everson twins, Kuni Oosthuizen was still 16 at the time. There were a couple of big names. But look at what's happening today.
Like now,
It's CSKA Moscow, Dmitry Afigenogov, you know, from that side, being one of the chief scouts that side, Mr. Troitsky, you know, there's NFL scouts coming out here just to see
what
athleticism
NFL scouts
and how they can advance their own game. You know, we saw Daniel Adongo
go to
the States from the Blue Bulls. I played with him there, you know, just because of his physique. It was considered, at a stage, he was actually beating PSPs. You know, in the test,
powers test,
so box jumps. Distant jumps, and so it's just incredible that these people are coming out here to check this out. South Africa has a wide range of different cultures, different kinds of genes, you know, and it comes off, you know, is amazing athletes out there, and from all walks of life, and it's just beautiful that they can all mix up. You see the players walking around here, you know, players from Tanzania, players from these country districts, unions we're speaking about, walking up against, you know, the huge names. Names that have been part of the SA elite squad since they were 14 years old.
Yeah.
You know, walking next to them, side by side, competing against them. What an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, we see the coaches as well developing their skills, being tested, and then being rewarded, you know. Look at what Coach Pio has done with Selborne this year.
It's
beautiful what Border has become. You believe we're actually speaking about Border being unbeaten, coming into the Craven Week?
It's crazy.
That's a joke.
I think we'll look back at this moment and think, what was going on there?
When you actually start to look at the stats of the Craven Week, when it started and all of that, you'll realize that East London and Border was a big part of it. It was the heart of it. It was the nucleus of how the Craven Week even started.
So it's
going back to its roots. There should be no surprises. And it's beautiful to see finally the demographics in the country and where rugby is played at young ages.
They're starting to settle.
They're starting to find a bit of momentum now.
Definitely.
You know, and it's coming through the coaches. They've done a great job.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Also the Lions, you know, becoming a force to be reckoned with now, taking on the Western Provinces and the Blue Bulls.
It's been
a beautiful Craven Week. Huh?
It has. And it hasn't started now. Mzex, I'm going to get into a little bit of background now. And you've been at KES. You're a KES boy. Schooled there. Did you imagine that this is where it would be for you as a schools coach, appointed this year, high level meetings? Was this always part of the plan, or were you just focused on doing the right things you could at KES, rising from there as an educator, becoming a coach, and eventually mentoring a very strong KES side this year, and taking over from Muspil House? How much of this was part of the vision, and how much of it has just been a blessing that's just those exponential blessings that have come just out of the blue?
I think you're right. A man is exponentially blessed, to be honest.
Yeah.
As actually P and I were chatting, sort of the first time P and I bumped into each other was at Wilde Club. I think it would have been 2013, 2014, as two young assistant coaches.
Yeah.
Kevin Taylor had taken him as he was Kevin Taylor's assistant. I was Carl's assistant, Carl Spillas' assistant.
Yeah.
So it's obviously a long road for us. But I think for me, you never start coaching and say, I want to be the SA Schools coach. That's the one part, because I have vivid memories like the Kremlin in East London. You see Ian Mack and those hooks, they selectors, and you see the solid top brass. In those days, I think, if my memory serves me correctly, you used to apply at the Kremlin for the SA Schools job.
Right.
I think you used to apply like on the Wednesday, and then the SA Schools team would be announced on the Saturday after.
And they appoint the coaches there.
So
you have to be on your best behavior.
The Oaks who fancied themselves used to go to the Craven Week with their CVs in hand.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Then, you see, then.
The Oaks who fancied themselves.
No, that's what would happen. It should get awkward in management.
Yeah.
You'd have to say, listen, brother, you're going to apply for that job. Because, come Wednesday, the Oaks would want applications. And then, by Saturday, when the team gets announced, the coaches also get announced. So you're just as shocked as the boys do.
Yeah.
To find out who your coach is,
So I think Sorry have done well in starting to create a pathway via EPDs. I mean, I think P and I were the coaches of the first EPD camp, elite player development camps.
Yeah.
Back in 15 maybe, I think.
Yeah.
And so obviously Sorry have started creating a pathway in that regard. But a man just wanted, at that time you just wanted to just hang around and survive coaching the first side, eight years later, we were actually calculating or sitting with Bafana and Tleko yesterday. It's like, winning and losing is all in us. And I said to him, this at the end of this season I will have spent, I think, something like 100 games with being the first team case coach.
Yeah. So 100 games.
100 games.
And take nothing away from what you did to the school. Let's take nothing away from your performance, what you did at Selborne. What you did, right, at Cairns. Yeah, come on now. We know the stats. You can speak about EPD and all of that. But you're right. You've done the work. You've worked with some really great coaches. And it's beautiful to see SA Rugby being able to reward those kinds of people and actually taking in that data, keeping an eye on
prior
the people
to
actually
the hustle and bustle that over a week. I think that needs to be noted.
I think also the we're fortunate. At least I've been fortunate. I've worked with I work with guys who look after us. I speak about Ojoe Mongalo.
Those
guys got time for us, man.
Yeah,
I can't imagine what it's like for them.
Yeah,
breaking into the scene.
We're
really fortunate. And you sort of go like that. I mean, I remember my first Craven League, we took the Lions to the final. We played against the Western Province started team.
Yeah.
The 12 Oaks. I think the Oaks on the bench were playing these schools, man.
Yeah.
They had Damien Willemsa. They had Gianni Lombard. They had all sorts of Oaks, man. Yes. If you think about all those Oaks now, Salman Murad. We'd plucked Taron Green from fullback, turned him into a fluff.
To make something happen.
So we needed a lot of X Factor. And five Craven Leagues later, here we are. So it's been, we went to a final, lost a final, won a final. So I think this week is also a pathway for coaches. We speak about what a platform it is for kids. But it's a platform for coaches. Think about the challenges. I think about P. So they're fortunate, they've got fewer schools to pick from, but their schools are they're situated far away from each other.
Exactly.
So what is it like to have a border practice? You have a border practice, you're going to go to Queen's Oak's going to come to East London, and you go to Queen's.
And them Mchacha schools, former Transkei schools as well. You don't know what you'll find there, bruh.
So,
your Lizard Kobokas, that still falls under Pure's jurisdiction.
Can you mention the Limpopo Blue Bulls Oak? The coach, he's got to get it up from Zanin with an oak from Mahuba's Clue for that. Frankie Meyer, what I'm trying to say. So it has its challenges. The oaks up country or in the metropolitans, we've got, someone was saying they're like 150 something rugby playing schools in Joburg. So the Lions.
Imagine. And they're all just here, like JP's here, St. John's is here, Kez is here. you're like, if you want to go to JP to watch a game, I'm sure you don't even get in your car. Like, I'm going to take a walk down to JP.
Imagine trying to organize practices as well. You know, big problem. You know, imagine trying to organize.
John's,
you got that situation that, you know, everyone, they joke about the Lions. We have a Craven Week before Craven Week.
Yeah.
Because we've got like something like 6 rounds of trials. You get through comfortably 400 players. It's a challenge for coaches too, because you got to try and, whatever circumstances that you have, you gotta, you know, when you arrive here, you gotta be organized.
Yeah,
so it's a platform for coaches.
The Joburg thing, just while you brought it up, there's so many festivals, right? And I worry because those festivals are like, certain rock star mentality can develop in young kids because now I'm in the Cass Festival, now I'm at St. Stadium's Festival, St. John's, Kersney, Hilton. Wherever you go to play in a festival, it does puff the chest up a bit, doesn't it? And how do you manage? And you're managing the kids whose schools are actually having these festivals, so they're guaranteed to have the spotlight on them. You've got your Super Sport cameras. You're gonna have your Fudges there, your Brayton Pulses. You're gonna have pretty much everybody there streaming. It's just become a whole lot bigger event for these kids. How do you manage to make sure that they keep an even tone through it all?
I think first and foremost, you know, when you're a teacher, discipline's vital, man.
Yeah.
And I think the second part is,
does that help that you come from a teaching background?
I think it helps, at least from my experience. The second thing is, we've got to remember these are 18-year-olds. There's we were speaking yesterday about the difference between a 17-year-old playing at the Craven Week and an 18-year-old playing at the Craven Week is crazy. The 12 months is unbelievable. You take a 16-year-old who's playing at 8 or 9 o'clock to the first team is playing at 3 o'clock in front of 20,000 people in the derby. Now he comes here, he's got a 5-meter line out to win the game for a particular team. Or whatever.
Yeah.
If you're 16 versus 17, yes.
You could even argue it'll never be more significant those years. Throughout the rest of their rugby career, in fact.
Pete, now the challenge is obviously different from region to region. A lot's been said about the way your teams have developed. Your Selborne team has developed a particular style and feel, a very competitive, very intense on defense, very intense on attack. Having your journey through rugby and as an educator, what have the kids taught you on how to develop as a manager and how to develop as a mentor?
I think let's go back to Mzakes first. What he's not sharing with us is what a winner he is. I don't know, I'm trying to find a better word for it. He's a fighter, this man. He doesn't lose much. He really doesn't lose much. So you ask from Kez and you look at last year. You took over last year. No, three years ago. And then you look at last year and you look at this year. And you look at all those stats. And then you look at his involvement in the Craven Weeks and you ask how many times he's lost a game at Craven Week.
Yeah.
You know, it's the first time. It's the first time he's lost a game on the first day. It's the first time he's been part of a team that's lost a game on the first day.
Jeez.
You understand?
So from the time you were assistant coach to the time where you kept going up and up,
Zakes isn't happy.
Zakes is not taking the shit quite well.
Yeah, he's not liking it, man.
And that's why he is as successful as he is, because that for him doesn't sit well.
Yeah.
You understand? Yeah. And we talk, we share a lot of things.
Yeah.
The one thing we don't do, and I'll gladly say it, and we don't take back-to-back losses. You don't do that.
Yeah.
It's utter nonsense.
It's sacrilege.
Yeah, correct. Everyone understands it. It's who we are. We just bleed a bit differently in club.
Yeah.
And that's
why
maybe we sit here and with the way we are. It's just that drive. There's an inner drive that's just not enough. No matter what we do, you've just want better and want more. It's like this feeling of, I don't know, you're chasing something and you don't know quite what it is.
You feel responsible to a certain degree.
Correct. You will get there one day and you're like, okay, this is where I was going.
Yeah.
But at the moment, it's such a nice journey. It's a beautiful journey.
Yeah.
Because you can go anywhere, you know.
Yeah.
Take a short left if you want. Take a short right. No one's paved the way for us and said, look, come here, my butch. This is the way you're going to take. No. We have to find out. Sometimes it's difficult.
Yeah, you have to make
a U-turn, start again, you know. So, and you talk about border schools, you talk about a lot of things. And I think, man, sharing this,
yeah,
the chats we have with people that have done it before us, the struggles are the same for a black man.
Yeah, you understand?
Even though we come from different places, the struggles are the same. And when we share those struggles, I think we've got this inner drive that just takes us to a different level.
The special segment of this episode is not a Rugby World Cup story, but it is a story that I felt is important to tell, especially at a time when the eyes of the world are at teams like South Africa, you know, to understand what rugby means for us back in South Africa. And I thought it's a story I wrote for New Frame, but I have the conversation. It comes from the Craven Week experience that I had earlier in the year, where I was able to sit down one morning at the Grey College Stadium before the start of the Friday games at Craven Week. And it was about 7 a.m. The sun hadn't broke and it was very, very chilly morning, but I managed to sit down with SA Schools coaches, Piwe Nomlomo and Mziwake Nkosi. Mziwake Nkosi was the SA Schools coach. Piwe Nomlomo was the SA Schools Academy coach. They coached the Lions and Border Bulldogs respectively. And they've since been brought in a whole lot closer. Obviously, we know that Mziwake Nkosi has always been in the Lions structures. He's also the first team CARES coach. So they've been brought closer to the franchise ranks, franchise and unions ranks. And Piwe Nomlomo as well has gotten an opportunity to join the Sharks and become an assistant coach there. And that is an incredible, incredible achievement for him. He was obviously the Selborne head coach. He has also coached at the academy at Southern Kings in the past. And he was obviously the Border head coach this year for Craven Week. And he was the assistant coach last year to James Winstanley in the Border Craven Week. And Border has been the plucky underdogs in these last 2 years when Piwe has been involved. And these are some of the rising coaches in South Africa. But it was the conversation wasn't so much about the coaching, just about the future of rugby. And about what rugby means to these kids in South Africa. It's part one of the episode. Part two, we'll play it next week. We'll infuse it with some Rugby World Cup and whatever else is happening when I'm back in the country. Also in that conversation was a friend of mine, Tunzi Fudge Mabeta, who played for the Blue Bulls. He came from Pretoria Boys High School. At some point, he was the understudy to Victor Matfield at the Bulls, played for many years, very talented number five lock. Intelligent thoughts on rugby, and the four of us were sitting down, and there was Morgan Peak, who works for OFM, in the background, and he was taking pictures, and he even said after we had the hour long interview that he appreciated being in the room while we chatted and spoke about the honest things that really, really impact rugby. So I really hope this conversation, if anyone around the world who wants to know what it means to be South African in rugby, this is the conversation that you really, really want to listen to. It's more than rugby. It's more than rugby for us. It's a livelihood. South Africans view rugby as a chance to make themselves seen in the world. It's a chance for some kids to get out of a rural area. It's a chance for some talented kid to get a chance in the world to change their families' lives for good. So listen to this conversation between myself, Piwe Nomlomo, Mziwake Nkosi, as well as Fudge Mabeta. That's it from me, Sboom Tugeliso, and you've been listening to the Sports Live podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Do also catch us on timeslive.co.za, as well as Sowetan Live, Business Live. We are also on Iono FM, the Apple Podcast Store, or wherever you get your podcasts. It could be Spotify, Stitcher, Castbox, Pocket Cast, wherever. To connect with us, please use the hashtag SportsLive. Share your comments with us at TimesLive or at SowetanLive on Twitter. A big thank you goes out to the Multimedia Live team led by Scott Peter Smith and producer Paige Muller, as well as a Tiso Black Star Digital Sports Department headed by Mninawa Mchana Ntloko. Our sound and audio mixer is Innocent Manyike. From us at the SportsLive podcast, it's goodbye for now.